The Open Mic on WLR with Davida.
Davida Home Care. Live your life your way. The sound of Waterford. WLR.
And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome along to the Open Mic, the podcast right here on WLR. Lovely to have you with us. And my very special guest this week is, some people might know, some people may not know, but we deal with lots of people from Waterford on this particular show. And it is the one and only Mario Rosenstock. Mario, how are you? And welcome along to the Open Mic.
How's it going, boy? I'm a real Dacia boy, and I'm delighted to be talking to me old buddy there, John Keane there, boy. Fantastic, boy. Great to be back. See, even talking down to Waterford, I get the old accent on me now. I'm living up by Larchfield there. I was living up in Ballybeg for a while, and then beyond the Golden Fry there, near St. Joseph's and Benildes.
Just down the end of the folly.
Beyond Twombly's there, and pick up an old flake for myself after mass. memories of 35, 40 years ago.
It could go on and on and on. Listen, Mario, firstly, thank you very much for joining us on the Open Mic. And secondly, I mean, you have made a living, which we will get to during the show over the course of the next hour or so, a living on, you know, on your voice. And, like, I knew this a long time ago, and I don't know if everybody knew, but you are a Waterford lad, 1971. You were born in London, but then the family came over here. What's the connection with Waterford? Was it the mum or dad, or was it both?
Oh, total Waterford, like. Yeah. I mean, I was born, that Wikipedia is wrong. I was born in 1970. And,
You look younger than that, you see.
Thank you so much. I came over to live in Waterford pretty much immediately when I was a couple of weeks, 3 weeks old. And I lived with my mum and my dad. And then my mum and my dad kind of had a rickety marriage. They kept splitting up and fighting with each other and breaking up and coming back together again. And actually for a long time, I went to live with my grandparents in Waterford. And my granddad, Sean O'Donovan, had a farm out in out beyond Kilcone Park, about a mile and a half out beyond Kilcone Park in the old Tremore Road. And he had a dairy farm, cows, and you know, about 80 acres, and he was a well-known and well-loved dairy farmer in Waterford. In fact, he was chairman, I think, of Snow Cream, the creamery at one stage.
Yeah, joke. That's my dad worked.
Yeah, go away. Yeah, and my dad had was a chairman at one stage.
Oh right, okay.
And he had all these sort of friends from Waterford. I used to remember meeting them all. O'Keefe from O'Keefe's Bread. Sean O'Keefe and everything used to come over to the house. And then all these wonderful named people like Tommy Chastey and Wally Whittle and people like this. Names which you'd only find in Waterford. Yeah. And names which I subsequently went on to. Actually, I created a Waterford character years and years and years later on the radio show on Today FM. And I created a character called Mossy Hennebry. Mm. And Mossy Hennebry was your archetypal Waterford bucko, you know. And but with this amazing name. You know, like Mossy Hennebry, almost a Norman influence on the name. I remember another guy I used to know in Waterford, Henry Melbourne. He sounded something like I could see in Fawlty Towers in 1975. but a quite real Waterford head, you know, and the Shanahans and these kind of people. And, you know, another friend of mine, Dylan Bible, Lindsay Lodge, names like that.
Yeah,
wonderful names, you know. So I brought up in Waterford on a farm, idyllic upbringing. Sun shining, little house in the prairie, you know, 15 dogs on the farm, puppies being born all the time, going up and down to the farm, helping to milk the cows and herd the cows. I didn't milk the cows, but helping to herd in the cows. Ma, hell, ma boy, ma. And that's where actually doing the cow is where I got my Jerry Adams impression, John.
Is that where you got it from?
I have never been a member of WLR or any other terrorist organization.
So so it was like the same tone as a cow. I would rub a cow's nose and the cow would go. So, and that kind of lent itself to Jerry Adams' voice later on. So a lovely childhood brought up on a farm. And I went to Water Park Junior School and started in Water Park Senior School before I came to Dublin.
What do you remember? What do you remember of Water Park? Because it was, you know, for Water Park, I would have been there with St. Paul's lad, and all the lads I'd know would have been, you know, Mount Sion, De La Salle, literally just across from Water Park. But it was I won't say it was slightly different because you got educated and that was it. But what was it like growing up? What was Waterford like? What used you do like at lunchtimes and at the weekends? What did you do back
then? Waterford, we used to play a lot of conkers. And the Conkers was the big thing, you know, Chestnuts and all that sort of stuff. And yep. we were down by Ballinakil in that lovely old house and on the way out to Viewmount.
Yeah.
And ultimately Ballygunner. And it was a small school and it was a beautiful school. And there were a couple of, you know, Tarmac Adam tennis courts and a big, huge orchard, which we used to play tennis in. And I remember my first teacher, Brother Lyon, and, you know, and... I remember my first crush, actually. I was only about six, and my teacher, she was Miss Stapleton, and I had a mad crush on her. And even though I was only about six, and I used to try and get my maths right so I could sit on her knee and all that sort of stuff. So it was brilliant, you know. So Waterford, fantastic. I used to play tennis in St. Anne's Tennis Club, and I still play tennis all the time. Mm. And I loved it. So it was kind of an idyllic upbringing, you know. You know, we at lunchtimes we'd go out and we'd get chips and stuff and come back, so I had fond memories of Waterford.
And what's like when you started like into your teenage years? Then would have been what around 1982,
yeah, 83, 84.
And what used to do then? You know, to entertain yourself in Waterford back in those days. What did you do?
Well, I kind of left, actually.
You left.
So I left Waterford. My family came to Dublin and. But just before that, actually, I'll tell you, I used to play. But before I left Waterford, I had two glorious years playing for Bolton Wanderers Football Club, boy. And I was the captain of the under-12s. And we had a wonderful coach who's still around called Andy Skelton. Mm-hmm. And I think his nephew, actually, is Darren, used to work for the Waterford News and Star.
That's right. No, Darren, very well. Yeah, yeah.
Darren, yeah. And I get the odd text from Darren. And Andy Skelton used to be the coach of Waterford. And I dragged him up on stage once in the Theatre Royal when I did a show in Waterford about 7 years ago. And Andy had that thing that all kids who play football in Ireland will remember and understand. I'd get the ball in the middle of the park. Right. And in training, I'd be dribbling around everybody and Andy would be going, "Come on, Mario, come on, Mario, express yourself, boy, express yourself, boy, go on, Mario, boy." Right. And then it would come to the day of the match and we'd be playing someone like Southend or something like that. And I'd get the ball in the middle of the park and then the eternal call, "Get ready, Mario, boy." And of course, that's what every footballer who ever played footballer in Ireland has heard. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
We were taught that the football was a hot potato and that the last thing you wanted in your life was a football. Get nothing rid of it, Mario, boy! And so that's what we did. And but I remember Andy fondly, and he was a lovely guy and hopefully still is a lovely guy. And I dragged him up on stage and I showed him some old photos of himself and myself down by Bolton.
And community, you know, when you think back to that and you're doing the show again, as I say, we're going to walk, you know, talk and walk into the show in a couple of minutes. But I mean, coming to Waterford, you have so much stuff that you can lean on and so much stuff that, you know, is it obviously makes it easier for you. But as you go around the country doing the show, where do you get the little nuggets of information from?
Well, just in Waterford, Waterford would be a special case. So when I come to Waterford, I do sort of a bit more, you know, local, a little bit more local stuff because of my association with Waterford. But I remember like I did Vincent Brown one night in the Forum in Waterford, and I did Vincent Brown's TV show. So I reproduced Vincent Brown's TV show. So I basically dragged up everybody from the audience to be a Fianna Fáil, a Fine Gael, a Sinn Féiner, all that sort of stuff. And they didn't know what they are, you know. Mm. So I labeled them basically. And one of the fellas then, I started shaking him at the thing. I said, look, whatever your name is, David, you're from Sinn Féin. You are a paramilitary. You are, and he said, "Mario, stop. It's David Power." I went, "Who? David Power. I was in class with you, Mario. For God's sake, stop, Mario." And I was there. And I'm sort of half as Trump going, David. Oh, and I'm sort of half Mario, half Vincent. David. Oh, sorry, David. Because I didn't know who. It was my friend of mine from 40 years ago in school. But then I went to boarding school in Cork.
Yeah.
And so that means then down in Cork, I have all these associations. Because I went to boarding school for 4 years in Cork. So that means I can do loads of Cork things down there.
Right.
But other than that, my show is obviously made up, researched, planned by me, and the show is the show. Yeah. It's only when I come to places like Waterford that I do all the extra stuff.
Yeah, and the show, by the way, the show is coming to Waterford Theatre Royal in October.
Yeah, so basically I did four nights in April in the Theatre Royal, all sold out. And the Theatre Royal said there'd be room for more. So we came back, and I'm doing two more nights on the 25th and I think 24th and 25th of October.
Yeah.
Just the Saturday and Sunday prior to the October bank holiday midterm. And I can't wait, because actually the Theatre Royal is one of the most beautiful little spaces in the country now.
They did a beautiful job on it, all right, yeah.
Oh, haven't they?
Yeah,
it's
fabulous.
Just gorgeous. And I stay around the corner in the Granville Hotel. I just walk across every day and do the show, and I loved it. So highlight of the first show, the first run of shows, I think was probably Trump, because I do a rally in the show, which I turned the audience into a Trump rally. But basically Trump started talking about, leveling out Johns Park and all this. And he started talking about putting a wall around to prevent the scum of Kilkenny from coming into Waterford. The crowd are going nuts. The crowd are going. When Trump proposes the wall, the crowd starts standing up and everything and cheering. And I thought they'd go mental. And then I started talking about leveling Ballybeg and St. John's Park. And I thought, before the show, I went, oh, Jesus, that might be a bit touchy now. Yeah. And they all just roared with laughter. Like, they loved it. So the Trump bit went down big. And I have this Tommy Tiernan show as well, which is a new thing I do, which I do. I recreate the entire Tommy Tiernan television show.
All right.
And it's that's good fun as well.
Stay with me. Just coming back for the next little bit of Mario with us on the open mic here on WLR. We'll be right back just after this break.
The open mic on WLR with Davida.
Davida Home Care, your trusted local provider of home care services.
Welcome back. It is the open mic here with Davida Home Care on WLR. My guest this week is Mario Rosenstock, who is with us as well. Mario, from your teenage years, then you moved out of Waterford, as you say, and you went to Dublin, was it? Where did you go?
Yeah, I went to Dublin first, and I went to a kind of a really progressive, comprehensive school, New Park. And when I came from Waterford, I came from with a long green duffel coat, a bowler haircut, and a briefcase.
Oh, a briefcase, mind you.
A briefcase.
Yeah.
A satchel, a briefcase.
Yeah.
And I walked into class and they went, we'd like to introduce our new student, Mario. And they all just roared laughing at me. I was basically, you know, this country bumpkin.
Yeah.
But within about a week and a half, I had pierced my ear. I got a Larry Mullen haircut and sawn off t-shirt. And I had become one of them, you know.
Did it take you long? Did you miss Water? Did you miss your friends at that stage?
I did. I was young, you know, I was just turning 13. And I missed them, and I missed Waterford, you know, and it was tough coming to Dublin. It was tough coming to Dublin, but it was sink or swim. It was just jump in and swim, you know. Turns out I'm quite gregarious and outgoing. Yeah. And so actually I made friends easier than I thought.
Excellent. So what happened next then? What were those years like for you? What did you do? What did you hope to do when you went to school? And, you know, what was your plan afterwards?
Again, my family was kind of rickety, so they kept breaking up and splitting up and falling apart again. And so then the family kind of decided that it would be best to send myself and my brother down to boarding school in Cork. And so I went to boarding school in Cork when I was 14. And that was the beginning of me falling in love with drama and acting.
Mm.
I loved boarding school. They had amateur dramatics, and I started doing plays. And I started doing plays in school. And that was the first time I did a proper play. I did a play called Death of a Salesman, the Arthur Miller play, which like tore my heart out. And from that moment, I got the bug, especially through a teacher I had called Mr. Daunt, Stephen Daunt. And he came and gave me that Robin Williams, Dead Poets Society kind of thing, where the teacher is your inspiration. And he used to say to me, I think you've got something that you should maybe think about continuing. And I'd never forgot that. And I said, yeah, I'm going to absolutely follow this through to the end. And so that was it. At about 15, I'd say, I knew pretty much for certain what I wanted to do. I just wanted to pursue this thing. And I'd always done voices and funny voices and, you know, took the piss out of people in class and did the teacher's voice and stuff. I wasn't exactly the class clown, but if I needed to, I'd use it at times. And then when I'd go home, especially on the farm with my grandparents and everything, they used to put me up on the table and I used to do loads of skits. I used to do my auntie, my uncle and all that sort of stuff and all that sort of stuff. So I knew really early that I wanted to be an actor or a comedian or a performer of some stage. I didn't actually know comedian. I just thought a performer, an actor, a person who's in the center of the stage, being watched by other people doing stuff. And I knew that that's what I wanted, because the feeling that it gave me was so warm. I loved the connection with a crowd. I loved that feeling of stillness when you're quiet and they're quiet, and then when they're loud and they're laughing. I just loved, I got addicted to it. It's the same as other people who get the bug, or bitten by the bug, so to speak. And so when people say, do you get really nervous and all this? You do get nervous at times, but it's more butterflies, because you keep remembering that how much you love it. You just love being out there in front of people. And I think people who do come and see my shows, they know, whatever they think, they go, cheapers, this guy loves doing it. It's clear he loves doing it, and I do.
Like, I mean, you do, the thing is, you do love doing it, because, like, I've seen you a couple of times. And on
Where
stage,
have you seen me?
I saw you, the last time I saw you was the Dalman and Carlo.
Dalman and Carlo. Well, I remember that one.
And it was a night, and I remember how, I know you have the screen, because obviously you have to have your transitional period to do it. Now, I don't know how different it is now. I'm sure you have to have a
massive screen, and I interact with the screen.
And you got to do that to change it to the next one. And I remember Ian Dempsey was standing over by the bar here.
Yeah.
And you were on, you're doing your bit on stage and the whole lot. And I said, does this guy ever take a break? And like, even when you're off the stage, you're obviously getting changed, you're doing it the way it's going, this, that, and going.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's a non-stop marathon of just, you're on for as long as you're on the stage. Even if you're not on the stage, you're still on the stage.
And there's so much interactivity with the people in the audience as well. I'm hauling people up and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I love it. I try to keep myself fit. I try to go do lots of walking and tennis. You have to be physically somewhat fit to do what I do. I mean, I think Britney Spears, I think, once said, singing and dancing at the same time is really hard. Singing is not too bad. Dancing is not too hard, but singing and dancing at the same time is hard. And that's essentially what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to be fairly cardio okay to do it. But it's mainly because I love it. I love the vibe in a live audience.
Yeah.
And that's why I've been doing it so long. I just, it's what I feel I was born to do, nearly, you know, if you could be quite spiritual about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all know what we want to do, and getting to actually do it is the dream. Take me back to when you finished school and you do, you know, you had done some of the shows, you say Death of a Salesman was the first and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where did the next part lead on to?
So the next part went straight into Trinity College. So I went to Trinity College, and I knew, I had researched it because I knew that I wanted to do acting. And so there was this famous place in Trinity College called Players, and it's the Amateur Dramatic Society for all the students. But there's also a drama degree that you could do. But if you do the drama degree, you can't do Players. There was a political thing between the two faculties. And so the thing you could do was you could do a undergraduate degree and do Players. So I did politics and I did economics. And that kind of cemented my love of politics. Like, since I was 12, 11, I would be watching those debates with Garrett Fitzgerald and Charles Haughey in the Today Tonight studios with Brian Farrell and everything on RTE. I would have been young fella, but I would have been really interested in politics. I would have seen these people as characters, gigantic characters. And indeed, you know, Haughey and Fitzgerald and people like that were big characters. And so politics then cemented my love of politics and gave me the confidence to be able to talk about politics, and then also then to be able to do sketches about politics, knowing that I kind of half knew what I was talking about. And so I went to college and I did politics and economics, and I did play after play after play after play after play. I did, you know, so many plays. I did 15 plays in 4 years. I think most of them were kind of in the lead role. We went to awards, we won awards. I just tried to do as much acting as I could. And I found that during the acting, actually, even when I was doing a serious role, people would sometimes laugh at what I was doing. And I was trying to figure out this. I would ask the director sometimes, why are they laughing at this? And I don't know, it's the way you're coming off. You're coming off kind of funny about it. And so this led me to believe that actually there was something going on with the way I was performing characters that was making people laugh, maybe even when they shouldn't be. So it lent to sort of a comedy, chops that maybe I was into comedy. I was into being funny, or trying to find the humor in texts and stuff. So that I did loads of plays and I did my degree, scraped through my degree, did loads of plays. But during my first year in college, I did a play and I didn't realize an agent had come to see it, a big agent in Dublin. And they left a letter on the notice board. No internet, no phones, no email, no socials, no mobile phones. And the internet and the letter just went, we saw you last night, thought you had a lot of potential. Have you thought about becoming a professional actor? Basically, I brandished this letter around college then to all my friends, like, you know, I have the letter. And went up, met the agent, signed up. Before you knew it, I was walking in to international film auditions as a 20-year-old auditioning for roles.
Yeah.
I'd walk out. I was mad. And because at the time there was lots of filmmaking going on in Ireland. And, you could hear about all these things and you'd be sent in and do all these posh photos and all this sort of stuff. And then very soon after that, I got an audition for Glen Rowe, and it was the part of the Doctor. And Glen Rowe at the time, John, I don't have to tell you how big it was. Like a million people used to watch it every week. Right. For a big story, 1.5 million people would be watching it every week. Mm-hmm. And just to put that into context for your listeners, 1.5 million people is who watches The Late Late Toy Show. So every week was the equivalent of The Late Late Toy Show. Glen Rowe, 8:30. And everybody forgetting, this always says people, I forgot to do my homework. Where in the world, Theresa Lowe, half the young kids in Ireland, boys fancy Theresa Lowe. And you'd watch Glen Rowe. And so this was big. Glen Rowe was big, and it was written by Wesley Burroughs, and it was huge. And after 4 auditions, I got the part of the Doctor, the local Doctor. And this wasn't just going to be like a small part. This was going to be like written in, you know, you're going to be in it. And my grandmother in Waterford just couldn't have been more made up, my grandmother. Like floppy-haired, Hugh Grant, Mario, that's what she wanted me to be. And she was just made up that I was going to be on television every Sunday. And so I started doing Glen Rowe and met all these basically living legends, Joe Lynch and Mary McAvoy and Mick Lally. Well, holy God. And, you know, imagine, you know, just to walk into a rehearsal room and see all these people. It was surreal.
They were icons.
It was surreal, John. Sitting down there and watching Miley. And then I'd see Mick Lally smoking and I go, oh my God, Miley smokes? And of course he didn't. Mick Lally smoked. Miley didn't smoke. And Mick Lally would be reading Dostoevsky or something really complex. And you're going, sorry, Miley reads Dostoevsky? Because Miley wasn't Mick Lally. Mick Lally was a highly intelligent, well-read, philosophical, quiet, beautiful man. God rest his soul. He was a lovely man. And everybody loved Mick. And, and he was a Gael Gore and a superb actor. And he played this gobshite, Miley. Mm. And
played it really well. Yeah.
And he did. And we believed Mick Lally was Miley. And then there was Mary McAvoy and Joe Lynch and all these. Emmett Bergen, Dick Moran. And Dick Moran was my first scene because... Wesley Burroughs had the writer at Glen Rowe, had a heart attack. And while he'd had a heart attack, he collapsed on the ground and his wife, I think, called the doctor. And when the doctor came in, the doctor, Wesley Burroughs said, looked about 12. And Wesley got an awful fright because he expected an older doctor to come in, the bespectacled, monocled doctor. Yeah. And so Wesley then, when he recovered, wrote this part that Emmett Bergen would get a heart attack and that this young doctor would come in. And Emmett would go, keep him away from me, Mary. He looks about 5. And, Dick. And so I was the young doctor. And before you know it then, John, I was labelled the dishy doctor.
The dishy doctor,
because
that's right.
I was probably the only person under 35 in Glen Rowe. And, and so I used to get all this, like, fan mail, letters, 5-page letters, but also gifts. People would send you necklaces made of flowers, wristbands, and... it was then I learned about fan mail.
Yeah.
What is fan mail? Fan mail is, hi Mario, we love you playing the doctor. Then 5 pages about themselves.
Oh, really?
That's what fan mail is. That's fan mail.
We're going to take a short break. Don't forget, Mario is in the Theatre Royal in Waterford 24th and 25th of October, just the weekend just before the bank holiday, which is perfect. We're coming back in the open mic with more about Mario in a couple of moments right here on WLR.
The Open Mic on WLR with Davida.
Choose Davida Waterford for all your home care needs.
The sound of Waterford. WLR.
And you're very welcome back to the Open Mic right here on WLR. Nice to have your company this Sunday afternoon. My guest on the show is Mario Rosenstock. His show, of course, is in the Theatre Hall Tickets. I wouldn't say there's too many left, but there's tickets still on sale at the moment if you want to check those out. Mario, pleasure to have you with us.
Loving it, John.
Before we get into the fact that, and if anybody missed at the start, Mario was born here in and brought up for the first part of his life in Waterford. If you missed the first part of the interview, and you're
Keith Barry gets pissed off because he's slowly overtaking him as the most famous post-Daisha comedian and entertainer.
That's it, yeah. And do you know what? We'll have to get the two of you on a
Open mic. I'm good friends with Keith.
He's great crack, isn't he? He's great crack. He's actually going to be on this show in a few weeks, please God, and all going well. But the thing about it is before what everybody knows you now as, if they don't remember Glenrothe, they're of an era that don't remember Glenrothe. Giffgrub. Today, if I remember, and I always say this to you, I remember meeting you in the Stillorgan Park Hotel at it was the Ad Awards, the Radio Ad Awards. That's how long ago it was, which would have been about 2000, 2001, thereabouts.
Oh, that's pretty much close to the beginning,
Close to the beginning there. And how did it start? Where did it come from first? Because all it was Giffgrub. It was Bertie doing, you know, am I right? Bring me back to where it started.
Where it started was, I'll bring you back to before, because I had been in... I had been an actor and I hated the life of an actor. I hated this whole idea of basically, and the life of an actor is 90% doing nothing and you're waiting for a job. And then the worst thing about being an actor is you do a great job and the phone doesn't ring. And then sometimes you do a crap job, appear in something really small and the phone doesn't stop ringing for 3 weeks. So you can't really count on it. So I had a lot of energy and I wanted to do something. And I was 26, 27. And I applied for this new radio station, Radio Ireland. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Interviews, maybe interview people, just be on the radio, do anything. Two people who I was sharing a flat with used to hear me doing these voices in the morning because they'd be outside the shower and they'd hear me as Jerry Adams showering with Martin McGuinness or something. And they just hear Jerry going, oh, Martin, pass me the Tahiti shampoo.
All right, Jerry, do you want your back rub down there?
And all this sort of stuff. And the girls would be outside the door laughing, just going, your man is mad. So she was on... a producer on this radio show, which was a morning show. And she said, it was a pop station and Radio Ireland had morphed into Today FM, calling itself Today FM. And she said, Mario, do you fancy ringing in as Jerry Adams about this Britney Spears new song? Hit me maybe one more time or something. So I did. I did think nothing about it. They said they had loads of calls. And then a producer guy rang me and he said, do you do anything else? And I went, for the first time in my life, I kind of counted up all the voices I did. And I did about 80 voices. And he said, do you fancy coming in and showing us? So I got a taxi, got in, just started doing loads of voices on the radio. Or not on the radio, just on mic. And all the voices were voices like Michael D. Higgins, Bertie Ahern, who was the new Taoiseach, Tony Blair, who I used to like doing, Michael Douglas, the film star.
Yeah.
Greed, for want of a better word, is good. Greed for life. Greed for power and greed for money. And greed is what's going to save this malfunctioning corporation known as the United States of America. Thank you very much, John. That kind of vibe. Mm. And, James Stewart and things like that. Random impressions. And but I did about 80 of them. And they loved them. And they said, can you write? And I said, no. And they said, would you write? And I went, I'll try. Couldn't write a joke. But then they said, well, can you come up with anything? So I came up with this thing, basically... At the time, 1998, Ireland was obsessed with the peace process. Jerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, David Trimble, Tony Blair, Ian Paisley, Bertie Ahern, all of this sort of stuff. But also on television, one of the biggest programs on television was Star Trek, The Next Generation. And I decided to fold those two things into one. And I made Jerry Adams and Martin McGuinness the captains of a starship called Starship Compromise. And Jerry was the captain and Martin was his number one. And they would patrol around the galaxy, not looking for war, looking for compromise with various different civilizations. So they will go to the planet of the Daniel O'Donnells and they'd meet a million Daniel O'Donnells who all you want to do find more tea for their planet. And they would try and help them to get tea or the Dancing Flatley planet. And anyway, they were all a bit mad, a little bit absurd, minute and a half long. I remember one night I was in a pub, though, and I heard two people at the bar going, did you hear Starship Compromise this morning? Oh, Jesus, they said the thing it was an amazing moment for me just to hear two people saying the thing that I had come up with in my mind. And then Ian Dempsey was hired by Today FM, and he was the biggest person in morning radio. Ian wanted somebody to work with. He had been listening to my skits coming in to the station.
Yeah.
And he said, let's have a chat with Mario. And that was all it. That was it. Basically, me sitting down with Ian was the beginning of all of this, because the fact that I got on with Ian and the fact that our sense of humours complemented each other and we felt we could work together made Gift grow up. But we had nothing. So Ian went, I love your Bertie. Could we do something with Bertie? And so this is actually, a lot of people don't know this, John, but we actually made Bertie the manager of a hotel. And the hotel was meant to be symbolic of Ireland. And that it would like be Fawlty Towers, and Bertie's like the manager.
Mm.
And people would come to the hotel every week, and that could be whoever's in the news. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yes, of course.
Yeah, like Tony Blair might visit the hotel and check in as a guest, and Bertie would be in the hotel. But we found that the hotel was too much. We did it as a pilot, and we found that the hotel was too, it was too removed from reality. We would have to stay in the land of fiction the whole time, that Bertie was in a hotel, that the hotel wasn't Ireland. We knew the people there. So we then came to the conclusion, why don't we just have Bertie Maria live with Ian every day in studio next door to Ian, like in that glass where you are now, next door to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that Bertie would be in a kitchen, because cooking was huge at the time. It was just the beginning of cooking.
Ready,
on
Steady
TV.
Cook was the show every evening.
All of that stuff.
Watch,
it was
yeah.
just cooking, yeah, cooking, yeah, yeah, cooking.
Yeah.
And it still is, I suppose, you know, but it was huge at the time. And so Bertie would be cooking up with something small every day. But the idea would be that Bertie would be joined by a celebrity every day. And that's twofold. One, that you could do a sketch around the celebrity. But two, that Bertie Ahern himself would get a photo opportunity to make Bertie look good. Because you may remember at the time, Bertie was very into the idea of the Dubs and Man United, but also that his daughter was going out with Nicky in Westlife, and you'd see Bertie pictured with Nicky in Westlife, and you go, wow, this is a really young Taoiseach. You know, Tony Blair used to hang out with Oasis, and now Bertie's hanging out with Westlife. And so we wanted to sort of reflect the fact that Bertie was a young Taoiseach, and that he was always on the move for a photo opportunity. And we knew he was from North Dublin, and I had the expression gift, gift. Gift was a kind of a North Dublin expression for deadly, brilliant, fantastic. And grub was food. So we said, why don't we call it Gift Grub? And it would be a daily cookery item with Ian. But after about 3 months, we ran out of cookery recipes and people to cook food with. And we more or less morphed it into the adventures of Bertie.
Yeah.
And then the adventures of Bertie became, well, he might go over to Man United, and he met Alex Ferguson, and then we met, I'd have to do Roy Keane's voice, and then go, okay, Roy Keane sounds like a character.
Mm.
I remember actually the first time I did Roy Keane, and Ian the next day said to me, he said, that little thing you do as Roy is funny. And I went, what? He said, the little chuckle you do. And I went, what? Like and it was, that's all it was. It was a little chuckle. And he went, make more of the chuckle. And I went, what do you mean? Like, and he said, yeah, that really works. And I went, why? And he went, I don't know. It just makes him, softens him up. It makes Roy this fierce warrior kind of seem as if he has a soft side. And people loved that. And so this is where Ian comes into it. He's a really good judgment and what the audience would like to see. And so then Roy became a big character, and you could do things like, I invented a thing then called Radio Roy, where Roy was given his own radio station and that Roy could have his own adventures. So then you have the adventures of Bertie, you have the adventures of Roy, and basically then the adventures of any character that becomes popular. So Michael D or Jose Mourinho or Boyzone or, you know, anything. So basically I was allowed to go anywhere with the sketches. And that's when the freedom of Gift Grub really took off, that you could actually make a sketch about anything, anywhere.
Well, look, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back for the final part of the show, and I want to talk to something. I want to talk with you about something. Long before we had the streaming platforms, long before we had, and something that I think that I remember was probably one of the first things that of an age I remember that, you know, going viral. And we'll talk about that in a couple of seconds. We'll be back after this. Mario Rosenstock is my guest on the Open Mic. We'll be back for the final part of the show just after this break.
The Open Mic on WLR with Davida.
Live your life your way at home with Davida Home Care. The sound of Waterford. WLR.
And you're very welcome back to the Open Mic here with Davida Home Care, final part of the show. My guest on the show today is Mario Rosenstock. Mario, pleasure chatting to you as well. Don't forget the Theatre Royal in October 24th and 25th of that month is when you're going to be back in Waterford. 4 nights earlier on in April and 2 nights again in October. Getting back, and people love going to the show. They always love it, and people come out, they go in and with the anticipation, oh God, is he going to call me up? And afterwards, it's about whether they got called up or who he called up and what happened.
Do you know one of my favourite things is? Sometimes I'm in a rush after the show and I have to sneak out and I go out the side door and I kind of have a hoodie on or whatever. And I see people smiling, leaving the theatre, and I see them talking about bits that were in the show. It's like as if I'm a ghost.
Yeah.
And they can't see me. And I absolutely love being a fly on the wall and hearing people smiling and laughing. And that you've sent them home and they're laughing. Yeah. Oh boy, that is such amazing feeling just to know that people are walking the streets and laughing and smiling.
I want to go back before we wrap up the show. We were just talking about Roy, of course. Even when you do the voice of Roy, you scare me.
Phil Corley as well. He was another DJ. He used to fill in for Ian.
That's right.
He said, "Mario, do you mind if you don't do Roy this morning?" And I went, "Why?" And he went, "I'm afraid of him." Phil, are you serious? Like, it's me, Phil. And they went, yeah, but it actually just makes me a bit too convincing or something.
Oh, does it?
And he used to get a bit scared by Roy.
Yeah. The fact is you play it so well and there's no let up in it when you're doing the piece. But back to 2004.
Yeah.
And it was the World Cup. And as I say, something that went viral before
the European Championships.
The European Championships. Sorry, my apologies. Yeah. And of course, Beckham missed the goal. And you went with the streets, dry your eyes.
And I stayed up that night to write that song.
This changed a lot of things, didn't it? Am I right in saying, because this was a song that was, for me, as a nightclub DJ, we had to play this in nightclubs because people wanted to hear it, they wanted to sing along to it.
Yeah, it was the streets were brilliant, huge, and it was a massive song, and it was like Roy Keane ringing David Beckham and Beckham describing how he misses the goal. And then Roy singing the "Dry Your Eyes, Bex." I know it's hard to take, but obviously, as I said before, like there's plenty more games in Group B, and all that sort of stuff. And people were just repeating it back to me. And I stayed up all night to write the song, and it went out the next morning. And we had like such a reaction to it, like flipping the computer crashed and all that sort of stuff. And we had a guy actually in the building, a bit like your guy Dean there, and he was a technical wizard. But it was only 2004. And I said, "Mario, I'm trying to track the downloads for this song." And he says, because he was well ahead of his time now, and he says, "We're getting stuff here about a couple of million downloads, right? In New Delhi, in India." Okay. They were pinpointed to New Delhi in India. In other words, after about a week, the song started going around the world. So it wasn't just Ireland. The song was being shared on files around the world and it was all over the place. And you're going, if you're in India, for God's sake, it's incredible. A couple of million downloads in India. So that means what was it in England and Australia and all those sort of places. So it was really mad. And it was obviously something that people could play then. It's like a song. So it's like a sketch, but it's a song. Mm. So that's easier to play and people could sing along with it. And it was big, you know. I don't know. I think 2 years later, the one I did with Keane leaving United was even bigger because that went to number one in Ireland, and I think it sold out in one day or something like that. And that was the thing about her leave right now, and that was a massive thing as well.
It was huge. But you started doing the stuff. It got to such a stage that you started going face to face with the likes of Roy and with Hector.
Yeah.
And this was, I remember the episode as well, you know, yourself and Hector, it was like a Hector off.
It was a Hector Inspector.
And it was like,
so we had a woman on the phone, we said, I said to Ian, I said to Hector, "I do a better Hector than you, Hector." And he went, "No, wait, Scobor, I do a better Hector than you." And I said, "Okay, we'll have a Hector off. Hector versus Hector. We'll have a Hector Inspector." And the Hector Inspector was a lady on the phone and she had to guess. So I would say something, "Good day, Maritatu. Oh, Matt Morty, good day on Navin Passe." And she'd go, "I think that's Mario." And Hector would go, and Ian would go, "No, that was Hector." And then she couldn't guess which one was Hector because we were both the same. So I actually stole Hector's personality. And then I did one with Roy Keane, face to face with Roy Keane. Nowadays, everybody talks to Roy Keane and Roy Keane talks to everybody. Back then, I'm talking about shaven-headed Roy Keane.
Yeah.
I'm talking about fierce Roy Keane.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Roy Keane where you feared for your life. I was the first one to talk to him like that. And then meeting Jose Mourinho over in the United Kingdom. That was unbelievable. And him hugging me, putting his arms around me, saying,
I play your record every day when I'm driving my two children to school. You are incredible. I love it. We sing your song. I am in.
You're just, I actually literally thought I was having an out-of-body experience when he said that. You're talking about the Premier League champions manager, the most famous manager in the world, saying, I sing your song on the way to school. And then he did this most bizarre thing, goes, I listen to your CD, it's fantastic, I love all your impressions. And then he said, do your Mick McCarthy. And I went, what? Do your Mick McCarthy. So I started going, all right, Jose. And he closed his eyes, he put his hands over his eyes and he went, it is Mick McCarthy, it is Mick McCarthy, it is Mick McCarthy. I was going, oh, sorry, this is Jose Mourinho with his hands over his eyes shouting, this is Mick McCarthy. What the hell? And a big hug. And it was, you know, it was just amazing. Like, I mean, you know, and he, you know, he kept in touch as well, you know, sent a, we exchanged a couple of emails and all that sort of stuff. And I remember being pushed over against a wall by Lampard and John Terry because they wanted to get a photo with me and stuff. And I'm going, hang on, guys, it's me that should be getting the photo with you. And they're there, no, mate, we've been listening to this for a month. Get up against that wall. And they're like, you know, they're getting my photo and all that sort of stuff.
Brilliant.
It's hilarious. Totally hilarious.
And then the stage show, as you know, the live stage show came along and you had to do the outfits. And we know, like, the Marty Morrissey, the eyebrows. I remember the episode of the Late Show. Was it Marty or was it Daniel who came out? And the woman in the audience was disgusted. It wasn't the real.
Yeah, that was Daniel. That was just a few years ago.
That's all, yeah.
So that was, yeah. So I came out as Daniel and this girl, very pretty girl, thought Daniel was coming on. The camera accidentally found her face and she was absolutely thrilled, right? Her face lit up when Ryan went, Daniel O'Donnell. Then you see me coming out, I want to dance with you. Camera goes back to her and she's like, disgusted. Absolutely. Like a bulldog licking pee off a nettle.
Yeah, she was awesome.
And her face was disgusted. And do you know what was the bizarre thing about that? I went into stage to grab somebody. And you won't believe this, John, because this is a fluke. I ended up picking her and I didn't even see her.
All right. Oh, you didn't notice that face. All right, okay. No. And did she play along? Because I missed the rest of that.
It was 220 to one fluke because there's 220 people in the audience. And I went up and I picked her because she was pretty and she had a red dress. And she hadn't a clue what was going on. And then she didn't know what was going on there either. And she started smiling and dancing along with me. But she was disgusted that Daniel O'Donnell wasn't coming on. And, you know, and there was another one then, I think Michael D. Higgins, I did full costume, Michael D. Higgins with Ryan. And that went around then on TikTok in the last couple of years because people slightly changed my face. So they used my head, but they slightly put Michael D.'s face into the TikTok thing, like AI.
Yeah.
And the comments are like, this president is out of control, this fella screaming and roaring about Ryanair and that he should have a private jet and everything going up and down to the thing. And like it's the beginning of that thing of what's real and what's not real anymore.
There's other things you obviously, you know, you're working on the live show, you work with the show then the mornings, you do all your bits and pieces. I do have to say that on numerous occasions you've helped myself out and different people as well, because you're very, very much helpful in the lines of, I've asked you a number of times where I might be teaching, you know, with some children in schools and stuff, and would you come in and have a chat with them, and it's never a bother to you. It's you're one of those guys that's one of the nice guys in the industry.
Thank
and you've
you.
And you've often helped out to tell children, to tell young people, like, yeah, I started there, that's what I did, and you've gone through and you've given them some great advice over the years. And the feedback to me afterwards when those particular courses were finished, that the children said, can't believe we got to speak to Mary Ross. I can't believe he's so and they don't, kids don't say down terror, but that's what it means, that he's so down, he's so cool, he's so hip and he's so witty.
Well, I can imagine, I always thank you for that, and I can just imagine what it would like to be like for me to be in that position and what I would feel like if somebody came in and did that, and I just wanted to reproduce that feeling of what I would feel like if somebody else did that. And so I love the idea of, like, I was teaching for a little while when I was in my early 20s as well. And I liked being a teacher because it was like being on stage. And so I liked being in front. I liked being in front of kids and teaching them stuff and helping them with stuff. But I also like to see people understand that, not the cliche that you can achieve your dream if you really go after it, but the idea that something isn't as necessarily far away and as difficult to achieve as you think it is. And so by me being close to them and by me telling them how I do things, they go, you know, it's doable. It's doable. Yeah. And you know that old expression, John, if I see it, I can do it. If I see somebody that I know doing it, I can do it. So that's what I kind of think. And I love to see the idea and form in their head that they might be able to do something like this. Not necessarily that they'd be doing impressions or comedy on the radio, but maybe that they could be a broadcaster, or maybe that they could be something that they want to try, you know, and that they, and so I do get a buzz out of that. And also it's funny because through the years as well, doing Gift Grub, the amount of people that have come up to me and gone, Mario, you're the only knowledge I have of politics. And I go, are you serious? Are you saying your knowledge of politics is me flying into space as Bertie Ahern and throwing documents out of a lunar capsule because they're Flood Tribunal documents and Liam Lawler is in the capsule with you? And they're there, yeah, well, that's the only politics I own. Gift Grub is the only way I knew politics. And, you know, Michael Noonan for me is just, you know, they'd come up and Michael Noonan for me is just,
ah, oh, yeah, I love an old wibbly wobbly wonder.
And I go, Michael Noonan never said wibbly wobbly wonder. And he went, well, that's the politics I know.
Yeah.
Or Michael D being frisked naked at an airport because he's told to take off his underpants because he keeps getting buzzed through security. And
I'm not taking off my underpants. I am the president of Ireland.
And all that sort of madness. And so it's a great privilege, you know, to be able to. One of my biggest, one of my biggest privileges and one of my biggest thrills is to write something, record it, and then hear it on the radio the next day.
Yeah.
In front of 20,000 people or whatever. That's still the biggest thing because it's still the biggest thing. I'm allowed to put my work on the radio for everybody to hear. I'm allowed to dream up something stupid, silly, and go see if people like this. It's an amazing privilege. Mm. It's still the biggest privilege. I have no problem at all with talking to younger
and it's
kids and everything. I love it.
And in everything you say there, it coincides with my belief. I have to say, for me, so long in radio, my passion of the power of radio is still there. And people you and I have gone through this and you work with people in the same situation as any radio station in the country. Oh, radios were under some pressure, from this, that and the other. But you give it for comedy, for you know, for news that is proper news.
Yeah,
radio's for every
still huge,
part.
John.
It's
huge. Radio's still huge. There's no question about it. I mean, radio is listened to 85% by people every day. 85% of people listen to live radio at some point every day. That's still a massive number.
Yeah.
There's still massive money in radio in terms of corporates that want to support it. The world of podcasting is very linked with radio as well. And so podcasting and radio are going to start feeding into and off each other even more, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to start bleeding into each other. And radio stations are going to start maybe broadcasting some little podcast bits. And podcasting is going to become more interactive and more radio-like. So the whole audio medium is massive. And why wouldn't it be? You can be in your car listening to radio. You can be running down the road. You can be walking up a hill. You can be milking a cow. You can be shearing a sheep. And you can be listening to a podcast with John Keane or Mario or whatever. And you can be listening to live radio. And of course, radio is live mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if something happens, as we're all waiting, Steve, you know, never know what Trump is going to do. You're always wondering, if something does happen, I'll hear it live on the radio. Whereas with television, the vast majority of television is pre-recorded. And you have to stay in a captive place to watch this screen.
Yeah.
So, radio, long live radio, John.
Yeah.
And long live it.
Before I let you go, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to ask you a question, which I'm pretty sure you probably don't have an answer for, or you can't answer it. Who's your favourite character that you've done over the years? Have you a favourite? Or is it just too many to go there?
My favourite is always like what I call the new one. If I get a new baby that I can look after, I get infatuated by thing. I would say I'd probably have two probably favorites. I'd say Michael D. Higgins because I've been doing him since 1996. I've been doing him since 1989, I'd say, since I was 19. And then he just kept going and going and going and going. And I love the fact that he sounded a little bit like my grandmother in Waterford.
So he sort of had that effete sort of thing going on.
Mm.
And a little bit of a poshness to his accent as well. When he's in the country, he kind of goes, yeah, we'll have a great time and I'll be president and I'll be one Galway United. But then he's with posh people and he sort of changes his accent and he becomes more... So he's one of those chameleon-like characters. And I find that quite interesting. And I remember when he went to the United States of America, he was lecturing for a while, and then he suddenly became American. And he started talking about all those Trumpy people and everything.
So he has multiple characters himself. And I suppose the other one is Roy, you know? You know, the Roy one is because Roy keeps reinventing himself.
Yeah.
Roy wasn't huge. Even though Roy was the captain of United, not many people knew what he sounded like. You know, Sheila in her 20s wouldn't have known what Roy Keane sounded like. But after Saipan, Sheila began to remember this voice.
Of course I want to play with my country. Of course I do. Nobody wants to represent our country more than me. Nobody. And then, you know, this kind of little voice came out, the little doe eyes and the little eyelashes and the little Diodora top and all the ladies going, he's gorgeous. He only wants to play for his country, doesn't he? At the end of the day.
And then he kept going. He reinvented himself as the biggest pundit in the UK. And now he's the biggest pundit and he keeps, it's his job.
And now he's making a fool of himself. He's eating ice creams and Cornettos. And he's, you know, he's at 99s and he's here. Enjoy this, enjoy that. You know, give me a break. You know, give me a break. You know, you're having a laugh at the end of the day. Having a laugh. And, you know, he's one keen to another. You know, I don't know if we're related at the end of the day. You know, absolute shambles. Your side of the family have let you down badly, by the way. Badly. The Keens, you know. There was bad Kilkenny Keens. We heard about that, you know. we heard about these people. You know, there was two strains. All credit to DNA. We heard about the bad side of the family. And you are it. You are it. You're on the radio. The big lad on the radio. I'm the big man in Waterford now. It's your job. Get on with it. Get on with it, John. Stop giving out. You're laughing there. I see you laughing, having a great time. What are you doing? Nothing. Nothing. It's the bad side of the Keane family. The bad side.
You still scare me.
Because he never stops. Once he bites onto you, he doesn't let go.
Mario Rosenstock on the open mic here in association with Davita Home Care. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time out. You're in the Theatre Royal in October, as we say. Tickets are on sale for the two gigs. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I wish you every continued success. Until the next time we meet, man. Have a good one.
Thank you. My pleasure talking to anybody in Waterford and everybody in Waterford. And actually, may I say as well that I came down to Waterford to do an outside broadcast with Ian in 2009. And it was terrible. The place was all boarded up. It was miserable. It was dour. And it was grim. And I was sad about it. And I came back in April. And boy, Waterford is a way, way, way better place. The pedestrianization, the shops, the activity, the vibrance, the greenway. The restaurants, the cuisine, you know, it's just Waterford is for me, it's on the way back big time.
Can't say any more than that, man. Thank you so much, Mario. And it's been a pleasure. Mind yourself. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
The Open Mic on WLR with Davida.
Davida Home Care. Live your life your way. The